Welcome to the Roundtable Podcast, a ministry of Westside Church that seeks to help those who have questions of Jesus, His church, and the call to follow Him.
Well, I want to welcome everybody to another edition of the Roundtable Podcast. It is my joy, and I mean this with all of my heart, I'm not blowing smoke, to have Brent Ingersoll
awesome.
With us, with me today. Brent, I've got 1,000 questions for you.
Yeah.
But before I get into those questions, I want you to tell us why you're here, what your story is. I can fill in the details and give the bio. I have the bio here, but I think it would be better to have it from you. And so tell us who you are, why you're here, what your story is a little bit, and I'll just kind of interject every once in a while with some questions. So I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, well, I'm first time ever on the West Coast right now, so that's an exciting thing as a maritime boy. Beautiful place. What brings me here is, you know, God's given us a great story. Where we come from is St. John, New Brunswick.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm here to share that at the Multiply Conference. So we're in St. John, New Brunswick. We are an established church, but my story that I'm interested in sharing, really, I guess when I come into the picture, was about 4.5 years ago in 2012. I took over leadership in that season, and it's been quite the journey where God's kind of put His hand on us and doing something unique.
What's the name of your church?
Our church's name is King's Church.
King's Church in St. John.
We're in St. John, New Brunswick, and we're branching out. We have a regional vision of Atlantic Canada right now, and so God's kind of give birth that in us in the last year, where we're going to be planting in the neighboring provinces in the Maritimes. So we're going to go to the major cities in those areas. Halifax is a large city, so we're going to move to Halifax here next fall. We've got our planter on our team right now, just being mentored and marinated. And so we're going to be sending him out in the fall. So, but yeah, it's been a wild journey for the last about 4.5 years.
Let me back up a little bit, because I think it's from St. John, born and raised.
I moved to St. John. I'm from Fredericton, which is about an hour north of St. John, still in New Brunswick.
Yeah.
Born and raised there, and then moved to St. John 11 years ago, fresh out of Bible college.
Where'd you go to Bible college?
It was called Kingswood University. It's there in New Brunswick. It's in it's another part of the province. So small college, couple hundred students when I was there. I went through there, and it's an interesting story to even get there. I was at a liberal arts university before that, and you know, grew up in a Christian home, had Christian values, but I was kind of exploring my freedom, as many do when they get out of high school and out of their parents' house. And I got to a place where I was heading down a pretty dark personal road, and I felt God kind of put His hand on me and say, you know, this isn't what I have for you, and I want you to, basically I felt like Him just calling me to repent. And the best way I knew how to repent was to get as far away from what I'm doing as possible. So I was like, what's the craziest thing, most opposite thing I could do? And I decided to go to this Bible college at the time, which was the last thing. I mean, I was an athlete, and just those were those people.
Sure.
And I just, it was the last thing I was interested in doing. So I felt like kind of a naive idea of
how
God...
You told your parents and their hearts stopped.
They were loving it. They thought that was the best thing ever. But so I went there, and God really grabbed a hold of my heart in that season. And I just walked through doors, I guess, that God opened in front of me, and found myself in full-time ministry. I never had a great call.
Right.
You know, people ask me when I was called, and I haven't been yet.
I was about 15 years in before I felt called.
I'm fully in. I know this is what God made me to do, but I never had a thus saith the Lord, you know, you need to be a pastor. It was just one of these things I kind of fell into, trying to follow Jesus the best I knew how. And so here I am. So I took a position there at the kind of low end of the totem pole.
At the church you're at now, so started on staff.
Yeah, I did. And it was actually my uncle was a senior pastor at the time, and he took a chance on me, and which is very uncharacteristic of our family. We would be the ones to say we're not giving special treatment. Anyway, he opened a door for me, and had kind of the lowest job on the I did the everything, you know, a little bit of everything.
Sign changer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he moved on out of there as a senior pastor. He has had a great run for about 18 years, and grew that church to about 600, which
which is huge in St. John.
Yeah, it's huge in the Atlantic Canada. At the time, I think it was the second largest church in the Maritimes, even then. Most church averaged, 50 or 60 people. You know, the church landscape in the Maritimes is very bleak. A lot of dying churches, a lot of closing churches. Last I checked, in the city of St. John, there were about 55 evangelical churches in that city of 130,000 people.
Wow.
Average church size would be 60 or 70 people. So,
so
less than 5,000 people easily attending church in St. John, you know. So, and over 1,000 of them would come to ours. So I started there, and my uncle moved on. New guy came in for a few years, and he, to his credit, brought some needed kind of direction, vision change. Our church was the, your stereotypical attractional production church, big Easter productions, Christmas productions.
A lot of dramas.
A lot of dramas. the choice every year. So, and you know what? That had a great run, though, and there are still people at our church that are like, you know what? I found Jesus at that thing.
I know.
And it, for a season, it was.
You always feel bad, right? Because you kind of make fun of it, and then
you
they'll go.
You do, but like, hey, I was saved at that.
You go, I take it back.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've seen the value in that, but it certainly had come to its end, and it wasn't really working like it used to, and it was harder and harder to do that. And so my uncle transitioned out, and which that was really his thing and his mantle. And he transitioned out of that role and moved away, and a new guy came in, and he dealt with some real difficult transition in that season. And I don't know his whole story on a personal level, but as with any guy, when you get in a difficult season of leadership, the stress has got to go somewhere. And he had a bit of a moral collapse and a moral failure there. It was exposed in doing some things that just wasn't okay.
Right.
And it was a real sad story. And so I was 29 at the time, and our denomination came in and read a statement that he'd stepped down and this had happened. And so our church was just reeling.
Right.
And the district superintendent handed me the mic that day. And because I was at that time the second senior person, even though I was the youngest on staff, I was the second senior person. So,
already doing some speaking every once in a while, those
types
of things.
Yeah, I was doing about a third of it or more at the time. And I was also running the church on an executive level, like an associate pastor. So I was running the ministries and a lot of that stuff. So, which is great. And I want to really credit, the guy who was there before me for, and he opened the door.
Giving you the opportunity.
Yeah. And you know what? There's a whole other story there of learning how to follow and humbling myself. I didn't like the guy when he came in, and I dug my heels in, and
your uncle was the guy before. Yeah, so you have a bit of that.
I was still pretty young. Not that I'm not still young, but, I was very young at the time, just even in experience. And, and I just had someone handed me that book, Tale of Three Kings. Huh. And, I made a decision out of that. I mean, I was full on Absalom mode, right? Like, and God really shifted my heart.
You had the T-shirt that said,
"I'm Absalom." Yeah, I do. Yeah, and I decided to really come behind this guy, and you know what? He elevated me and gave me opportunity that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And so, at the time that happened, I was very much in a prominent position in our church.
So this is about what year?
2012. It was the summer of 2012, August into September, and that went official and became public in September.
So they hand you the mantle.
They did.
It was a
interim thing, but the district superintendent, our regional denominational guy, read a statement, and then he handed me the microphone in the service, basically a now what moment.
Well, hard enough. Taking over leadership as a 29-year-old guy after a moral failure of the lead guy.
Yeah,
I mean, that's difficult even if you have a ton of experience and you're, old sage, so to speak.
Yeah.
You're coming in at 29.
Yeah.
Your church is reeling. I mean, how did, talk about that.
Yeah, it was, God simultaneously dealt with me on a very deep level in that season, and he did a lot of the same work in the church. I think that's a thing. A lot of the time, the heart and soul of the leader will be to some degree mirrored in the church, without a doubt. And I was handed the mic on that day, and there, we have this, which I used to hate the thing. We had this, some old lady knitted or something, put together like a flannel
nice
banner in our main room.
And it don't had, ever touch that thing.
Second Chronicles 7, if my people who are called on my name will humble themselves and pray, I'll hear from heaven and heal their land. And so I was holding the mic kind of shaking and I saw it and I said, I don't know what to do, but we're going to do that. Huh. And so I said, I'm coming here Wednesday and I'm going to pray and you can come too. And so we had a few hundred people show up that Wednesday, and we've carried midweek prayer meetings since then, to this day, where we have prayers just kind of the front tip of the spear of how we see, you know, our ministry moving forward. So that launched us into a whole season though, where God really humbled us, showed us a great degree of our barrenness. We'd become, I would say, spiritually proud as a church that we were the big church and the production church. And we'd begun to transition into not the production church, but now we're trying to be cool and relevant, right? And that's some of the shifts that were made in that season from leader to leader. And we were getting pretty proud about that too. Like we're the young church and we're the hip church, you know, maritime hip, but we're the hip church. And, and just as we were in a real season of what I look back on as a lot of, you know, spiritual arrogance and pride and delusion of our own kind of barrenness, that all happened. It's funny, the night that I found out, I had a board member call me, actually the person that was directly affected by this thing that went on, and they called me. And I was just reeling, and I do what every great Christian does in that moment. I went to the Word, and I didn't have the verse, so I did the classic, like the Bible flop. God,
sure,
say something, man. And I just flopped my Bible open, and it landed at 2 Kings 14, and it talks about the story of Azariah, who's Uzziah, same guy, right?
Yeah.
And his story is, you know, I mean, we hear about him usually in Isaiah 6, in the year King Uzziah died.
Right.
And that our story really mirrored, our story of recovery really mirrored that vision Isaiah gives of after Uzziah died. You know, we just had a season of just being, a fresh vision of the holiness and grandeur of God.
So talk about that. You take over 2012, church is reeling. After the dust settled, how many people were with you from 2012 or around that, beginning of 2013?
So 2012 fall, we were about 600 people. Our church had fluctuated between 500 and 650 people for probably 10 years.
Right.
We were still there, kind of hit that lid and couldn't really punch through consistently. And so we were about 600 people when that happened on average.
Yeah.
And then, in that season where, I mean, just God's grace, we were humbled and God's grace just really poured out on us in really tangible ways. And, even that fall, we started growing immediately. Like we didn't see a dip. A lot of people don't realize how many people left.
Yeah.
We went within 2 weeks, we lost not just our lead pastor, but two other guys quit immediately. So we went from 7 to 4 full-time staff, basically overnight. A lot of long-time people left, had two prominent families that basically represented about 20% of our operating budget leave.
Right.
So we were in a season where...
It's hard, man.
It is, but it was amazing because I was at a place where God just... I came to a place with God. Interestingly enough, I was going to plant a church anyway, before this all happened. I had a call from a denomination 2 days after this all went down saying, hey, we want you to plant a church. And I said, call me back in another few months.
What denomination again?
We're part of the Wesleyan Church.
Wesleyan Church.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in that season, though, I came to a place on a personal level of, God, I don't care if you take this. I feel you've called me to this season. And if I get this job or not, it's whatever. And if you take us down to give me 6 or 7 people that want to start over, I'm in.
You're in.
Yeah. And so we did see some people go. And I was very, maybe there had so much grace on me. I wouldn't even call it mature beyond my years. I just was shut. I was insulated. Like God,
just
some things that probably would really bother me now.
Disgrace.
Like God's grace was so on me that I just look back on some of those things that as a 29-year-old, you know, I watched however many $100,000 leave and all that. And it didn't faze me.
Right.
I was too, I was too dumb to not, you know, I was too naive to not know.
But God's presence in that,
because
you fast forward now, 2017, so not that long ago. We're talking four and a half years.
Yeah.
Tell us about the ministry now.
We've been on the same kind of growth trajectory since then, year over year. We keep adding, and it gets bigger each year because of just the scale. But we're right now, we see about 1,300 people a weekend.
So I just want to pause here because people listening to this, 1,300 people in St. John, a city of about
130,000.
I mean, 1,300 people is a big church in Canada.
Yes.
It doesn't matter where.
Yeah.
It's a big church in a city of 3 million.
Yeah.
But you put Atlantic Canada, St. John, 130,000.
Yeah.
You take over from this situation, 29 years old. I mean, it is a miracle.
It's a miracle
story. It is a miracle story. So tell us about the ministry now, because here's what happens, and it's a sad thing. People go, well, you know, you grew. Yeah, you probably had some people, you know, from other churches come in. But you're telling me stories before this of hundreds of people coming to Jesus, hundreds of baptisms.
Yeah.
So
we've seen a steady harvest. It's been amazing to see in our culture, like, people getting just finding the gospel as good news and restorative and life-changing, because it is, right? And you get... You know, if you're like me and you grew up in church, you can get pretty familiar with grace, and you think you are anyway. You aren't.
Yeah.
But you have this kind of
whatever. Yeah.
And to see week after week, you know, families, full families getting changed, and it's just amazing. So we've seen well over 1,000 people since 2012 commit their lives to Christ, and we've baptized 400 and something. I should probably know that number off the top of my head, but it's over 400. We've been able to celebrate that.
That's a revival.
Yeah.
Those are revival numbers.
It is in our region.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I want to spend the rest of our time, at least a little bit of it, or maybe even more than a little bit, talking about your vision for King's Church.
Yeah.
How it gets, because you're now in two campuses.
Yep.
But you're unusual for an Atlantic Canada leader because you're thinking
regionally,
bigger.
Yeah.
You want to do more of this.
Yeah.
Tell us that story a little bit. And also, what are some of the roadblocks, barriers you're getting, feeling, the dynamics of doing church in the AC, those types of things.
Yeah. So our vision right now, so we came through this season, and it was a good 3-year window of just grace and growth, and in every way, numeric growth, salvations, depth, discipleship, finances, the whole thing. Just God got us in a place of health.
Yeah.
We were healthy. And about a little over a year ago now, probably about a year and a half, I started getting increasingly uncomfortable with that, because our story was forged in fire, right? It was through that difficulty, and we had to learn how to trust God, walk by faith. Mm. You know, I don't know where the money's going to come from.
Right.
All those things. And
you want to keep that sense of urgency.
I did, and I felt like the window, you know, as more money came in, we had more staff than ever, more great volunteers than ever, more people than ever. You know, the window where we had to actually tangibly trust God for anything was getting small. You know, you say you trust God, and we would say that we have faith, but like, I couldn't quantify it. Like, where on our balance sheet, you know, where in our plans does God have to show up, or we're screwed.
Right.
And, that window was closing. And so I began to seek God on, okay, Lord, what does a vision for us today that causes us to have to trust you and to give space to trust that you're going to come through, what does that look like?
Right.
That's when he kind of birthed this kind of regional multiplication strategy in my heart. You know, so St. John is not a unique city. The Maritimes is a pretty consistent culture.
Okay.
Halifax is a large city. There are about 500,000 people there, and it's a little more cultured. But by and large, in the Maritimes, you could spot a Maritimer, right? We're pretty consistent. And I felt like God's calling us to continue to plant churches in our larger populated cities.
Yeah.
And so right now we've got, we have two campuses in the city of St. John. We're going to launch our third on the west side, actually.
Nice.
Yeah. So
another west side church. Is, there's only about 12,000 of them.
We're not going to call it West Side Church. We'll call it West Campus. But
good luck getting a name, domain name if you
trademark. Yeah. But, and that's actually like an uncharted, man, like, you know, of the 130,000 people in St. John, you know, 125 of them are available. You know, it's not like, you know, we're a large church, you know, compared to other churches, but we're a tiny church compared to the mission field.
Right.
Right.
Like, that's exactly
it's like,
right.
It's so huge. And so we just feel like there's so much room for us to go anywhere in the region. And so we're going to launch a third campus in the city of St. John this fall. And then simultaneously, we're going to launch one in Halifax as well. And that's going to be a little more autonomous, although it's still part of the same organizational structure. We've raised up a guy who's going to pastor those people, primary communicator, all that stuff.
So live preaching in Halifax.
Yeah, but in St. John, and really our vision for Southern New Brunswick is I'll be the main communicator,
via video,
the main face of it, I guess,
sure,
if you will. But you know, we're really open. Like if we find that my mug is getting more traction other places, we'll beam it in. If we find that it's not helpful, we'll pull it out. We just want to grow the church.
Sure.
So we'll play whatever cards, you know, produce their greatest results.
Right.
So we're launching in Halifax, and then our hope is next fall to launch in Charlottetown PEI. So, and God's already seems to be preparing the way, and we've got people there on the ground already that are committed and in, and financial support and all that stuff. So right now, actually, I'm just praying for God to send our lead guy.
Would it be, well, let me back up. I won't even ask that question because I want to lead in with this question. The barriers when you present this to your body, you go, okay, here's our plan. We're going to do this, 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 and this. Is the reaction fantastic, or is the reaction, hey, Brent, no, we don't do that. We're going to lose people. We're going to get what?
It's both.
Yeah.
It's both. Within our church, there's not a lot of scarcity in the sense of we can't do this or we're not going to, like, God's shown himself so mighty for us that there's a lot of boldness and confidence in the vast majority of our congregation. I think most of them have absorbed that DNA of, we really believe God can do anything, and if he calls us to it, he's going to provide. So there's not a lot of, you can't do this on those ends. There has been a lot of, I would call it, maybe false humility in the, you know, the neighborly Maritimer. Hey, but there's already other churches there, and who do we think we are?
Yeah.
You know, that's a little presumptuous.
Mm-hmm.
We've certainly encountered some of that, both within our church and from without. And so we've obviously begun to navigate through that a little bit as best you can with as much tact as you can. But there's definitely a certain degree of scarcity in Atlantic Canada, I would say culturally, not just in the church. Like a lot of folks move, you know, a lot of folks move out west, you know, to Alberta, a lot of jobs. Joblessness is pretty huge in the Maritimes right now. Economy's not in a great space. And so that really affects the mindset of the average Atlantic Canadian.
Yeah.
So it's both. It's on the one hand, it sounds like Jesus. On the one hand, it's repulsive. And on the other hand, it's so refreshing.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of people, we're finding the more our story and the more momentum we get, the more people are coming. Like Jesus said, you know, as the Son of Man is lifted up, I'll draw all men to myself. And we're seeing that. Now at the same time though, you know, it's like, where does Paul say, you know, this foolishness to like the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. There's certainly a degree of that. And we have a sense even that, you know, there's not a lot of time left for us to fly under the radar, even regionally, where we've become not just a large church, but now we're, you know, a fairly large business, you know, as some of our political leaders see it and that kind of thing.
So, oh, is that right?
Yeah. So our influence, which is amazing, God's opening doors of influence for us in the region that I never thought would be open. You know, I was at a dinner with some business leaders, some major business leaders, not a few months ago, and I was sitting there thinking, I have no business being here right now.
Right.
But God's just establishing us and giving us a voice and input into the culture there. And it's super countercultural. And I think, again, it's just refreshing for people. Like, we're not hopeless. We don't believe the best days are behind us.
Right.
You know, we don't believe that nothing good ever happens here. And
is that a mindset? That
it's a mindset in the Maritimes.
Why is that?
I don't know. I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. I can't put my finger on it. I know in St. John, they say there was a great fire in the city of St. John that happened back in the 1800s. And before that, the mentality of St. John was going to be we were going to be one of the leading cities. I mean, it's the first incorporated city in Canada, right? St. John's the oldest. And there was a pioneer mentality originally, and the city burned down. And a lot of people say that's when the whole psyche of the city shifted. St. John, our city, would represent kind of the cultural psyche epicenter of the Maritimes. Like, I think, you know, St. John would be the maritimiest of cities. So
right.
I don't totally know, but I mean, you got people. It's a hard land. You know, a lot of fishery is a huge industry there, and you know, there's a lot of ups and downs in that one. Like,
it's very seasonal.
Yeah, it is seasonal, and you have good seasons and bad seasons. So there's just there's a lot of callousness, perhaps, in the average kind of maritime mentality, which is both good and bad.
Right.
They're resourceful people who, you know, they'll stick it out and they're tough, but at the same time, it leads to a lot of maybe pessimism and criticism, even apathy.
And that filters into the church. That's just
my land. It even within my relationships with other pastors of other churches, I mean, I confront that a lot of pastors just with this kind of disparaging, hopeless sort of, you know, nothing good happens here kind of thing.
And even with the hope of the gospel and Jesus being our hope, that still is an overwhelming cultural influence without a doubt.
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, what a backdrop to shine light, you know, like it is a little gloomy.
How are you received by other ministries?
Not great.
A little threatening?
I don't know if it's threatening. It perhaps is. I don't know. I don't have a lot of great connections. In fact, they've dissolved, interestingly enough. I have a small group of guys that I'm quite connected with, but
just in the city or
within the region. It's pretty connected, right? And then I have some great friends within our denomination and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't get asked to input or to help other churches that often within our region. I'm asked to talk outside of the region a lot more than I am within, which is telling, I think. You know, just on the perception and mentality.
What's the makeup of the church?
Yeah.
Big C church in the AC.
Yeah.
And the religious dynamic of the AC. What's it look like?
It's unchurched, like the average Maritimer. Within the church, you have a lot of dying churches. I mean, they're dropping like flies where we are. Like just a lot of maybe old mainline churches and stuff that they no longer can support themselves. So there's a lot of churches closing, a lot of empty church buildings. We thank God there are some shining lights that it's not all doom and gloom. That's the beauty of it is like, there's this kind of dark reality there, but there's also these churches like ours, and there are a handful of other churches that are growing and going the opposite direction. So, but the church landscape in St. John and in the Maritime provinces even is certainly there's a lot of decline and maybe plateaued churches at best. There's not a ton of growing churches right now, just a handful.
And the history over the last 100, 150 years really tied into Roman Catholicism,
a
big influence in the AC.
The Anglican Church has historically had a pretty big presence. Like, there were a lot of little Anglican churches. Like, somebody had a vision way back when at the Anglican Church to plant one, like, every 20 feet or so. I don't know. Like, there's just a lot of old, which is cool, but they haven't been able to maintain that. Like, there's just a lot of empty Anglican buildings there. But I know they're really working hard to kind of revitalize and that kind of thing. A lot of Catholics and a lot of people. It's interesting. We have hundreds of Catholics now at our church. Had made that shift, and we have had I would say probably 50% of our growth has been I would loosely call it transfer growth. Marginal Catholics or people who grew up Anglican and now they're coming back.
So and then the accidentally church. Saved.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
they just go, yep. whoa, I've grown up in the church and I've never heard this before.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then we have, which is very exciting, a large percentage of people that they'd never been to church and this is the first time they've heard anything like this. So it's a refreshing thing and it's good for a church to have to just constantly have that steady stream of people who aren't able to, you know, I was telling you earlier, I had a woman come up to me. I'd referenced Adam and Eve and she came up to me. She's like, who's Adam and Eve? You know, you mentioned some guy named Adam and Eve. Who's that?
Isn't that great?
It is great. It is. In some regards, it's preaching a challenge because you're trying to,
you got to keep aware.
To feed the sheep and you got some that don't even know how to eat. And so it's, you know,
I remember my wife about 3 or 4 years ago going to a chiropractor. And it was around Easter, and they were in discussion, and she said, yeah, we're going to celebrate Easter. He was born and raised in Vancouver in mid-30s, educated guy, and he said, his response was, what's Easter?
Yeah.
And so those are good reminders, and it's exactly right. We need to be aware when we're preaching and speaking and teaching that, that we have people we just cannot make assumptions about.
Yeah, and I think God honors just that, like, you do your best to be aware of that, bring them along when you can. And then I always have a sense too, like the Holy Spirit's filling in mm-hmm. a lot of gaps and potential confusion and stuff where in ways that I just can't.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I trust that too. I think there's a tension God wants you to manage. I think some churches go too far in that direction and they don't give the body any meat at
all. That's exactly
right. And it's like, I don't think that's the answer.
And you can't fill in the gaps every Sunday, every time you gather anyways, and you just pray, keep on coming back, keep on coming back.
Exactly.
Then you have the other things during the week that they can plug into that can slow things down and fill in the gaps just as you're talking about.
Yeah, and we're actually, right in this season, putting a lot into, we got a whole mass of people that, okay, they've been tracking with us a while, but I don't know if they really have a handle on, basic Christian theology, creedal theology even, and like how easy it is. I mean, I'm a Bible preacher and I stay pretty centered. But you could come to our church if you come once every 3 weeks or, you come on this week and then you come, you could have some messed up theology pretty easy. And I'm not teaching anything that's wrong. I'm just not getting enough.
Right.
So we're putting quite a bit of effort right now into that kind of internal discipleship, education, and training to figure out how to kind of bring these ones up. So
if we come back to you in 3 or 4 years, you got the two campuses in St. John.
Yeah.
You're going to have Halifax, Charlottetown.
Yeah.
And any other thoughts?
So last year when I launched this vision, we did a big campaign and we raised $1 million to go towards this.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good for you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. The early vision was, and we're open to God leading and open other doors. We see already that could happen, but the early vision was to launch our third in the city of St. John and then 3 throughout the region.
Right, you mentioned that. My bad.
So St. John's, Newfoundland is also a target for
us.
That's a really unique thing there because that's a very large city in a very isolated place. So it's like 350,000 people live in St. John's, Newfoundland.
I had coffee with Stephen Bray?
Is he there? Is he?
He's just outside, I believe, in St. John's.
Yeah, like Avalon Peninsula.
Could
like
be.
There's a large suburb that's growing fast there. Like it's a big city, but it's far away from everyone, right? Like you have to fly there or take a 15-hour boat ride to get to it.
But, yeah.
So we want to again, same landscape there. In fact, I think per capita, next to Toronto, that's probably the most unchurched city in the country.
Right.
So we've got a vision just to launch somebody there and see if we can.
Do you think, last question, just looking at the time, when you want to send someone, obviously beneficial to have somebody who's homebred, so to speak, from the AC, is it an impossible thing for somebody to come in from another part of Canada?
Increasingly, because of the way God's writing our story, I'm becoming increasingly open to not having to be indigenous.
Yeah.
And I actually think, I mean, obviously you gotta be able to speak the language and you gotta know your context, but I think there's to a almost damaging, weakening degree in the Maritimes, at least, we overthink that. And what the Maritimes need is counterculture. more than anything.
Yeah.
And so I once heard, I think I heard Brian Houston, the guy who leads Hillsong,
yeah,
talk about their strategy of launching churches. They're all over the world, right? They're in large cities,
sure,
that have nothing in common.
Right.
And he said, we stopped trying to crack the cultural code and just launched Hillsong churches wherever God called us. And so we're trying to more hone in on who we are and what our DNA is, and reproduce that in places we feel God's calling us. And so with that kind of mentality, it does shift how much I feel like we need to have someone that's from Halifax lead that charge. Obviously, there's great reasons why you could argue that's a better thing. But I wonder, though, especially in an area where we are that really needs counterculture, and we've seen, as God's kind of used our story, we've seen, like, just even networking, like, God has given me relationships, like, even meeting you, like, that, yeah, help me think differently than the average, maybe maritime paradigm. And so just traveling and having a different mentality, and God's infused our church too with a lot of people from around the world that's given us a different culture. And that vibe, I think, has really been appealing in the region, where people are like, you know what? Like, I'm hungry for something different. I don't want a product of here. I want a product of something else.
Right.
And so we've seen that just gaining traction. And so I'm feeling a lot more freedom. I could be wrong if we talk in 3 years. I'm like, yeah, that totally didn't work.
Right. But you're open.
I'm feeling a lot of freedom in, you know, yeah, what? If God's calling us here, we're going to be us there,
yeah,
right? And so I'm kind of interested in seeing how that plays out. But.
Well, the feeling's very mutual in terms of getting to meet guys like you and hear the stories of what's taking place in places that we just don't know about. We're isolated over here on the other side of the Rockies, you know, in the Pacific, on the Pacific Ocean. But just hearing what's going on, I mean, you're encouraging, motivating to me and to those people that are out here as well. So the feeling is very mutual and really excited about what's going on. If people want to get in touch with you, find you, perhaps somebody listens to this who's out that way, or perhaps somebody's maybe feeling a call to head that way, and who knows?
Hey,
what's the best way?
Well, obviously all the regular channels, like, you can find our websites, kingschurch.cc.
Okay.
And then I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I think I own the market on Brent Ingersoll. So
okay,
you can
just
look up Brent Ingersoll on Twitter, Facebook, or
Ingersoll, Ingersoll. Nice.
Yep. Yeah. So find me there. Love to be friends.
Thanks, Brent. Yeah. Really appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us for this episode of the Roundtable Podcast. For more information about the ministry of Westside Church, go to wchurch.ca.